relocation plans, as well as other important issues facing the station. Healthy refreshments will be served. We hope to see you there.
Good afternoon. This is the Shai Rana Show with your host, Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Zain Amin with the Shai Rana Show, and we're continuing our coverage, of course, of this war on Gaza, on Lebanon, on Palestine, on the global south, by Western powers and Israel. Today we're going to talk about several things, and then I'm going to share with you a sitrep that was conducted recently by the Anti-Empire podcast about what's happening in Lebanon right now. And there's a lot of updates, but the main thing is that you're going to be hearing a lot of discussion. If you're listening to U.S. Or Israeli media, you're being told right now that Lebanon is losing the war and they're going to be forced to come to the table. And the truth is far, far from that. The reality is that what Lebanon is losing is some heritage sites that are older than the United States or older than Israel. They're losing citizens. We're losing family members. We're losing homes. Israel is basically targeting civilian targets because they have a bank of targets in Lebanon, and that's been exhausted. So what they do now is they have these what some people call easy kills, and then they claim that there was an important person, or they bomb a civilian building and they say there was some members of the Lebanese resistance in there, and then they say, we thought that they were there, but they're not there. But the idea is to destroy as much of the civilian structures, infrastructure as possible, and to force the Lebanese resistance and the Lebanese government to the table to accept their conditions. Of course, anybody who watched what Israel is, the evil that Israel is able to bring on the world, bring to the world and bring to Gaza, what we've witnessed them do, is they don't care about treaties, they don't care about ceasefire, they don't care about humanity. They are still lying, as they did with the Amsterdam debacle that happened last week, and that's now being exposed, as they did with the beheaded babies, with the mass rapes, as while they were doing all of these things, and so on. So anyway, the point is, all this to say is, there is nobody feels the urgency to have a ceasefire. And as you'll hear right now from the report that I'm going to share with you, the latest report on what's happening about the movements against Lebanon and about what the Lebanese resistance is doing. As you know, the opposite is happening. Some of you might have heard that the Lebanese resistance has hit the heart of Tel Aviv a couple of days ago. That's the furthest there. If with every time they say the forces of resistance have depleted, the Lebanese resistance hits them harder and hits them further. And they've maintained so far their aim at military installations. If any civilian installations are harmed, it's because For example, the bombing in Tel Aviv was actually because of an interception that hit a building and destroyed that building and set it on fire and hit an electric utility that basically resulted in a partial blackout. And there was panic in the streets, including a man being run over as he ran from the explosion. And as you saw, the opposite of what Palestinians do, the Israelis ran away from that man instead of picking him up from the air, from the middle of the road. Even though it was would have been completely safe to do so, while Palestinians, when they're picking up their wounded, they're picked off by Israeli snipers. There were no snipers within any within hundreds of miles of that man, and he was left to die, or left to be badly injured and bleeding in the streets. We recently witnessed here in Washington, D.C., a great action by Jewish anti-Zionist groups that were protesting in the Capitol. And the reason for that is because Bernie Sanders had put forward a resolution to basically to have an arms embargo on Israel that is supported initially by a handful of representatives. And I would be pleasantly surprised if that's voted through, but I doubt it very much. So that was very well timed, and it shows that the struggle for liberation is continuing, and it'll continue into the next 4 years, whatever may come with Trump. Also, we witnessed in the last few days that hand, that American hand going up in the Security Council vote, where it's the lone hand again to veto a ceasefire vote that was put forward by the Security Council. Again, the lies of Biden and Harris are so glaring right now, with them saying we're ceaseless in our pursuit of a ceasefire. Of course, they opposed it, and they're arming Israel. And Biden, I don't know how a man with the brain that has turned into cottage cheese, as Caitlin Johnston called him, is being allowed to order things like long-range missiles to be given to Ukraine at this point when they're losing, which will only bring us closer to a nuclear war. And also, he's also signed he's given his approval to give the Ukraine cluster ammunitions, which are forbidden by international law and other unsavory weapons. So this man who's on his way out, who's a lame duck, who could be doing a lot of good at this point with no consequences, and at least protecting us from what's to come from Trump, he's doing the opposite. He's opening all kinds of venues to make the world more dangerous. I have no idea how the Democratic Party chose this monster, this dinosaur from the 80s, this architect of the crime bill, this racist who black people embraced in the last term in the election, especially the boomer. Fortunately, the younger blacks and younger Latinos, the younger Arabs, did not embrace that murderer whose legacy will be genocide and nothing else. He didn't do anything. He didn't accomplish anything in these 4 years except cause war and mayhem and make the world a more dangerous place. I hope, if there's karma, that he'll be sent to the seventh level of hell, as he had sent the world into it. And the last thing I wanted to say is that the as you will see from this report that we're about to listen to, the ground war in Lebanon is being lost by Israel, and the Lebanese resistance is basically handing Israel its behind there. They haven't been able to accomplish an advance of 5 kilometers without being pummeled and having to retreat. 5 kilometers, that's a runner could run that, in half an hour, basically. That's how much they've advanced. And every time they advance and they get pummeled, they make it up, as far as they're concerned, by hitting civilians in Beirut, in the Bekaa Valley, in South Lebanon, and so on. And hitting things like the community center in my father's village, which basically where the rubble fell on my parents' graves, desecrating them. They won't even let the dead rest in peace. There won't be peace in this globe until Israel is erased off of this planet, and the where Arabs and Jews can live together from the river to the sea peacefully again, and these European Zionists that came over can return to Poland and the European countries that they came from. So with that, let's listen to Gaza, Lebanon, Sitrep, day 410, which is titled by the Anti-Empire podcast as the a compulsive repetition, an apt description. Let's have a listen to that.
All right, Gaza War Day 410, Lebanon War Day 64. No end in sight. I am the guy now, it seems. It is my job to come on here and tell you that there's not going to be a ceasefire. There's not going to be a ceasefire in Lebanon. There, you're hearing all kinds of stuff about the ceasefire in Lebanon, the ceasefire talks. They sent a proposal to Lebanon. Lebanon said it's good. They sent it to Hezbollah. Hezbollah sent it back with comments. Now it's back with Israel. Nothing's going to come of this, you guys. Nothing is going to come of this. There will be no ceasefire in Lebanon. It's just an impossible, it's an impossible proposal. Because even if Israel said, fine, we'll stop moving into Lebanon and we'll stop bombing Lebanon, Hezbollah's position, the reason Hezbollah started the support front on October 8th was the war goes on until there's a ceasefire in Gaza. That was Nasrallah's policy. Nasrallah reflected the thinking of Hezbollah. Hezbollah is part of the resistance axis, which has an approach to this war that is, I don't want to exaggerate it, but without exaggerating, they have a unified approach to this war. They have a common approach to this war. Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Iran, Gaza, the West Bank, these are all working together to try to defeat Israel's aggression and occupation and siege and genocide. And so these are not going to be picked off one by one. And that's the resistance side. On the Israeli side, Israel is simply not capable of agreement. It does not honor agreements. It did not honor the previous ceasefire with Hezbollah of 2006. The whole support front that Hezbollah opened on October 8th, 2023, more than a year ago, was attacking border outposts, fortifications, spy equipment, that all of which existed in violation of the United Nations ceasefire resolution 1701. And the Israelis, who, by the way, lost the 2006 war, want to establish a situation where they can, their current ceasefire demands are that Hezbollah cease firing and Israel continue firing. Once again, Israel's war aim is the continuation of war. This is a new concept in diplomacy. It is a new concept in the contempt for diplomacy. It is, just to go back to the 19th century and the imperialists and the scramble for Africa, the Western powers believed in diplomacy between one another. They would have these meetings at Versailles or in Berlin, or they would all get together. The great powers got together and they resolved disputes between one another. France and Germany had a lot of disputes over this part of France. It's now France, Alsace-Lorraine. They had a lot of disputes over this piece of territory for a century or a bit more. And they would resolve these through diplomacy. Well, they didn't resolve it through diplomacy. They resolved it through World War I and World War II. But, and the 1870 war, they had lots of wars over this. But the idea was that they could maybe resolve this through diplomacy. And they could also resolve things like who was going to get Morocco, who was going to get Tunisia, who was going to get Congo. Was Congo going to all go to Belgium, or was some of it going to go to France? These are the kinds of questions that European powers resolved among themselves through diplomacy. They did not ever believe, because they believed in a racial hierarchy, they did not believe that you did diplomacy with the colonized peoples that they intend, whose lands they were stealing, whose people they were mass murdering and genociding. They didn't have diplomacy with Msiri, you know, one of the leaders they decided had to go in Congo, right? They didn't have diplomacy with the Sultan of what, the Mahdi, or the various sultans in Sudan, or the Mahdi in Somalia, or any of these people that they set out to murder and murder their followers and overthrow. They didn't have diplomacy with them. And Israel's attitude, the American attitude, and the British attitude, and the French attitude, and the German attitude, despite Germany not really doing much diplomacy historically, they just went straight into the mass murder and were kind of kicked out of colonialism by their losses in the world wars. But their approach to Lebanon, to Syria, certainly to the Palestinians, is like that colonial attitude that they've had in the past. They don't think in terms of diplomacy, negotiation, interests. What do they have? What can we give them? What can we get? They think in terms of what can we, let's tell them what to do, and they'll do it. And so they want to have a diplomatic deal with Lebanon that involves Israel going and bombing Lebanon whenever they feel like, and Lebanon restraining, disarming, and maybe even disbanding Hezbollah. And they're going to bomb and depopulate and kidnap and murder and massacre throughout Lebanon as much as their Air Force and their resources, the American resources, allow, until they can get that signature. So even if there wasn't an axis of resistance, even if this was a purely Lebanese issue, Israel and the American arrogance and their inability to propose a deal that is acceptable and their inability to fulfill an agreement, even if it was accepted, basically means for the foreseeable future, this war will go on. It will not be resolved through a ceasefire. The ceasefire that we had in November 2023 was a solid basis for de-escalation, a solid basis for a long-term ceasefire, a prisoner exchange, an end to the siege, an end to the occupation. Though that was the last chance. And when Netanyahu scuttled that deal, horrified by the fact that the prisoners, the Israeli prisoners that were returning, were talking about being treated well, we're talking about we're not fulfilling the atrocity propaganda requirements of them, we're talking about how they wanted a peace deal. Well, then they were put away, and it was, the genocide was doubled and tripled, and here we are. So I just want to tell you all of this by way of telling you that there's not going to be a ceasefire in Lebanon. And I'm very sorry to report this. I'm very sorry to report that there's not going to be a ceasefire in Gaza. And there's not going to be a ceasefire in Lebanon, but there is no end in sight. There will not be a separation of the fronts. There will not be an Israel that comes to its senses. There will not be an America forcing Israel to come to its senses. There will not be a Western friends of Israel forcing Israel to come to their senses. The West, the Americans, everybody is following Israel down into racist insanity. And we just don't have any idea how far down the West is going to go. There's a new low all the time. There are new lows locally, and there are new lows out in different Western countries as well, in terms of support for genocide, suppression, etc. So now that I've fulfilled my job to say there's not going to be a ceasefire, let's talk about the West. I mean, in social media, our friends at Free Palestine TV, Laith Maruf has been a guest on here a couple of times. Their YouTube channel was just shut down arbitrarily. No appeal, no nothing. So great. Our time, as I always say, whenever someone close to us gets shut down, I'll remind you all that our time will come. I'm on Substack. Who knows whether Substack will shut us down too, but Substack for the moment seems to allow videos. I gotta say, the notes, Substack notes is kind of a nice, it's becoming an interesting place. There are interesting notes there. The newsletters are good. There are lots of people writing really good stuff, and they do allow video and audio. When archive.org went down, I managed to publish the historical podcasts on Substack. So it's good. It's a good space for now. So when YouTube shuts me down, go look for me there, okay? Free Palestine TV, they're on Telegram, and they have other ways of reaching you too. So don't just confine yourself to, don't give up on Free Palestine TV now that YouTube has taken them down. Also, Palestine Action keeps doing the Palestine actions to try to stop the genocide. Apparently they disabled vans belonging to some company called PHS Group. And they said something in the report that I saw, it said work with Elbit, Elbit being the kind of flagship military industrial company of Israel. Work with Elbit, expect Palestine Action. So they're keeping up their work, trying to disrupt the operations, the genocide, military-industrial complex that runs throughout the West, Palestine Action mostly focused in the United Kingdom, whose prime minister apparently can't figure out that it's a genocide, apparently. So Gaza front, let's go to the fronts. Gaza front, Israel is trying to use kind of thieves, criminals, this kind of thing to disrupt aid. That's their ground strategy right now. They're taking a lot of hits in Jabalia and Beit Lahia, where they're northern Gaza, where they're trying to intensify starvation. They're trying to really implement a kind of Holocaust strategy there. There have been photos of them rounding up patients, stripping them naked in the cold, trying to kill people from exposure, very specifically trying to kill people from exposure, not allowing tents. They're bombing tents, they're firebombing tents. They're obviously bombing structures, and then they're also not allowing more tents in. So this is where Israel is at. This is where the West is at in terms of moral dissent. When I said there's new lows, they're finding the new lows all the time. The thing about the strategy of trying to find these collaborators to do these things, this is less effective than using their army, which is not all that effective, as we've seen for the past 14 months, I guess, coming up on 15 months in December. It's not as effective, and it's certainly not as effective as using the Air Force. These are the things that the people, the Palestinian resistance, can't reach. Collaborators is something Sinwar established a really effective system for dealing with. And so what I've seen in reports is that it's already the attempt, this attempt at doing this has already been more or less wound up and rolled up, I guess I should say. And, you know, they've tried this multiple times. It's not effective. Every time they try, it's basically fairly easily dealt with. But they'll keep trying because Israel seems condemned to continue trying things that don't work as they just try to advance their overall genocidal strategy. Speaking of repetition compulsion, reports from Jenin were that the Israelis withdrew after a 24-hour long raid in Jenin. During which they suffered one improvised explosive device attack on one of their D9 bulldozers. One of their APCs, their armored personnel carriers, was disabled. Their NAMR APCs was disabled. So it was a long 24-hour raid, lots of fighting with the resistance there. And they withdrew, and presumably they'll come back. Another repetition compulsion is the United States. There was a report that the United States was threatening Iraq. If Iraq continues to support the Palestinian resistance by launching drones, and mostly drones is what the Iraqis are launching, against Eilat port and other targets, Haifa, the Iraqi resistance has launched standoff weapons against Haifa and Eilat, and you never see what they've done. You never see, the Israelis never show you the effects. So all you ever hear is that they've launched them. But in recent days, as I've told you, I think two reps ago, there were a lot of launches. So Iraq has been raising the tempo of their launches. The United States is threatening them, which is just, it's just a strange thing. Like, what is the United States going to do here? Are they going to invade and occupy Iraq? I believe they spent the past 20 years invading and occupying Iraq, arguably the past 30 years invading and occupying Iraq. So it's not exactly a threat. They did better to de-escalate attacks on their own bases in Iraq when they offered to withdraw, and they said, we'll withdraw if you stop attacking our bases. And the Iraqi resistance did focus on Israel because of that promise, which turned out to be, of course, completely false. And the Iraqi resistance leaders have made the statement that they don't feel the need to fulfill that bargain any longer, but that doesn't mean that they haven't really started targeting these bases in any big way. They've hit the Americans in the gas fields of Syria, and they've hit the Israelis primarily. But my point here is to say this threat against Iraq is not exactly going to amount to, I'm predicting that the threat against the Iraqi resistance is not really going to be all that intimidating to them. Now, once again, repetition compulsion. That seems to be the theme of today's sit-rep. Yemen, I saw an article, the Resistance News Network put out an article by Rashid Al-Haddad in Al-Akhbar English. And it was it was an analysis piece where Rashid was saying that the Americans, because the USS Lincoln is leaving the Red Sea after getting hit by the anti-shipping ballistic missiles from the scary Houthis, the US is considering alternatives. They've brought these B-52s, which, I mean, they could definitely bomb Yemen with B-52s, but the issue is from where. And so our article was saying they're thinking of trying a strategy of attacking Yemen, get this, you guys, from Saudi Arabia. What an outside the box idea of having United States air assets attack Yemen from Saudi Arabia. That's some real out of the box thinking. It's and not at all what they've done for the past 9 years, which led to the terrifying near destruction of the Saudi oil facilities, followed by a quick ceasefire agreement and the openness now of Saudi to joining BRICS, the openness of Saudi to the Chinese mediation between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and the openness of Saudi to trade the Chinese in yuan. All of this openness was facilitated by the Ansar Allah, aka the Houthis, attacks on Saudi oil facilities several years into the Saudi, American, and UK genocide against Yemen that they suffered. Tens of thousands or more people, children starving, a lot of the same destruction which the Yemenis suffered under this proxy war. And so the idea that they're going to be more frightened of a land-based strategy based in Saudi Arabia of pounding Yemen, that's going to get Saudi Arabia into a lot of trouble that Saudi Arabia has already proven that they don't want any part of. So they may want to go back to the drawing board on that one. The Americans might. We'll see. Maybe the Saudis will be more open to it when Trump comes in. I don't see the strategic situation of Saudi Arabia changing because of the president of America changing. So I don't expect a solution. I don't expect an American solution to the problem of Ansar Allah to be forthcoming, I guess I will say. Maybe there are tricks that I haven't thought of. There always are tricks. The Americans, the imperialists always have tricks that are hard to anticipate. I always go back to the pager attack. They have depravities that are hard to imagine, and a certain ingenuity in their cruelty that is hard for normal people to anticipate, even experienced ones. But short of that, short of the Donald Rumsfeld unknown unknowns, there doesn't seem to be an easy plan to stop the Houthi Ansar Allah blockade of Israel, which is another reason the ceasefire the separate ceasefire that doesn't, that can continues the genocide in Gaza, how are they going to stop the Houthis? The Houthis, the Ansarullah, sorry, I should call them Ansarullah. Ansarullah has said the blockade of Israel goes on, not just as long as the genocide goes on, but as long as the siege goes on, while the siege of Gaza goes on. So the siege of Gaza, so if the genocide of Gaza started after October 7th, the intensification of the genocide, the siege of Gaza started, 20 some years before that, almost 20 years before that. So the siege of Gaza has to end for Ansarullah to stop the siege of Israel, the blockade of Israel. And remember, Yemen is training, has trained 500,000 soldiers. And as I've said before, they're not training them to sit around doing nothing. So we will, it's day 410 of the war, and there are probably a lot more days left. So now the main event of the evening, Lebanon, the Lebanon front. Israel, so a couple of interesting things. Israel has been doing really, really vicious airstrikes over the past couple of days, since the last sitrep. They killed three Lebanese army members, which is kind of another insult, adding insult to injury. The Lebanese army isn't fighting them, but the Israelis, I mean, standard Israeli practice in a way, right? To attack and kill people who aren't fighting them. Particularly intense bombardments of Beirut, along with continual bombardment of Gaza, of course. In return or retaliation, the Hezbollah missile force hit Haifa very hard and hit Tel Aviv very hard. They're trying to continually manage that escalation, but because of the radical escalation that the Israelis have done, they targeted the media spokesman whose words I've quoted many times in the sitreps, Mohammed Afif. They killed him in Beirut, not in the southern suburb, which they try to treat as a separate issue from Beirut. They killed him in Beirut. And shortly after the Hezbollah missile force hit Tel Aviv with some major missiles, you may have seen footage of a guy running from the missiles and then getting hit by a car and nobody even helps him. You've probably seen footage of the burning building. The building may end up having to be demolished. So this is the equation that Hezbollah is trying to constantly to instill in Israel, that they may not be able to stop them. Hezbollah can't stop them from bombing Lebanon, but they can hit them back in ever more painful strikes with their missile warfare, saturating the Iron Dome, hitting them with heavier payload missiles all the time and deeper into Israel, and now including Tel Aviv. So now we have Haifa and Tel Aviv under attack with significant payload missiles from Hezbollah. And that's part of the war now. This is what happens, right? When I noticed before that the Yemenis were testing that Palestine 2 missile, and then the first Palestine 2 missile hit Tel Aviv, and then another one, and then another one, and I've lost count of how many, but I think it's more than half a dozen that have been. And this is a big payload missile too, and you never know where they hit, but this one in Tel Aviv hit a target right in Tel Aviv somewhere, and there's lots of cell phone footage of it, and the building's burning and everything. So, and this is now, like, every time one of these things happens that's not happened before, it becomes part of the new norm. So now the new norm is Tel Aviv getting hit by 100 kilo payload, maybe more than that, missiles. And Israelis can now get used to that the way they get used to Hannibal Doctrine, the way they get used to the idea that their own army will kill them rather than let them be taken hostage for a prisoner exchange. They can get used to debates, public debates on the right to rape. They can get used to organized demonstrations against giving aid to, allowing aid, not giving aid, allowing aid into starving people. They can have a society that celebrates atrocities, and they can get used to all of those things, and including periodically getting hit by missiles in all their big cities. And as far as the ground war, they appear to have advanced in some places to the so-called second line of defense. So the operations room, I will try every few days, there's a report from the Hezbollah operations room, or the Islamic Resistance operations room. And these reports are like sit reps, which is why I like to have a sit rep if they do one, the same way I used to do a sit rep when Nasrallah gave a speech. I used to try to make sure that I did a sit rep, and similarly with these operations room reports. So the operation report, I'll talk about it in more detail, but I just want to show you two places. This is Shama. So you can see Shama, Nakura is here. There was a lot of fighting here. So the Israelis are advancing to Shama, and there's a lot of fighting here in Shama. And on the other side, on the eastern front, I guess, Markaba. So you've heard about a lot of fighting in Edessa. There's also now fighting in Markaba. Okay. I'm just looking for Hiyam here, because Hiyam is also a site of a lot of fighting over the past day or two. Okay, so let me put this map away for a second and read you what's going on. Okay, so Haifa, they start by talking about Haifa. They want you to know that settlers are now paying the price for the spread of Israeli military bases within settlements and occupied cities. So they're throwing the Israeli words back at them, close to commercial and economic interests. The resistance has fully prepared for and ensured its readiness to carry out similar operations in Haifa and beyond for an extended period the enemy cannot anticipate. So that's one major thing. This is not, I don't think they've reported on Tel Aviv, because this was their main report on the missile force. Now, regarding part two, regarding the enemy's declaration of the second phase of its ground operation in southern Lebanon. So first of all, they report that there's been a 40% reduction in Israeli aerial and ground operations along the border region due to the inability of its units to establish control within the Lebanese territory. The enemy hastily announced the second phase of its ground operation in southern Lebanon. So they're sending in the 7th Armored Brigade, which has this great reputation from 1973. I suspect nobody in the Armored Brigade was alive in 1973, but I guess military units carry their reputations for generations. I don't think the 7th Armored Brigade has as good a reputation for what happened in 2006, but here they are. They're very excited to begin the second phase of their ground operation with this armored brigade. So the Israeli Air Force continues daily aggressions. So attempted advances toward areas south of Hiyam further underscore the failure of the first phase. Hezbollah has carried out 350 operations on Lebanese soil and 600 firepower operations targeting Israeli military units inside the occupied Palestinian territories. We assure, they say, the officers and soldiers of the Israeli army that what befell Battalion 51 of the Golani Brigade on the outskirts of the Ainata Marun Al Ras Aitarun triangle is just the beginning. Let me just show you the triangle, I guess. So Aitarun is somewhere here, isn't it? Yarun is here. Aitarun is here. And what's the third place? Marun Al Ras, Aitarun, and Ainata. Yeah, right. So this is the triangle, right? Ainata, Aitarun, and Yarun, Marun Al Ras is also somewhere here. So this is the triangle. There was a lot of fighting there. The Golani Brigade took a lot of casualties there. The battlefield will prove this is just the beginning in the coming days and nights. So Western Sector. Let's go over this. Let's go over this on the map, shall we? Western Sector. We have the forces advance toward the town of Shama. Where's that here? Shama in the Western Sector with the aim of capturing it as part of efforts to pressure second line towns on the front, reducing the resistance's rocket fire on the town of Naharia. The rocket fire has been hitting Naharia pretty hard. And the occupied Haifa area, which is down here. Enemy forces infiltrated through the Labuna Forest, which is not on here, but they passed through the woods of Alma Ashab and Tyre Harfa. Here's Tyre Harfa. And they're trying to head towards Shama. The advancing forces fell into a series of ambushes prepared by our fighters on the outskirts of the town and within its boundaries, targeted by guided missiles, destroying two Merkava tanks and a bulldozer accompanying the force. They struck an infantry unit near the shrine of Prophet Simon al-Safa in the town center with a guided missile, causing multiple casualties, clashed against enemy forces at close range in the vicinity of the shrine, the municipal building, the mosque, and the outskirts of town over five times using machine guns, grenades, and rocket shells, causing a large number of casualties. Israeli medical units therefore intervened, dispatching two helicopters for evacuation and lighting the area around the town school to mark their positions. Targeted a Merkava tank with a guided missile on the outskirts of the town of Al-Jabain. Do we see Al-Jabain? It must be somewhere in the west too. I don't see it. Forgive me for missing it. Also shelled with 120 millimeter and 81 millimeter mortars. Okay, now Central Sector. That is Ainata, Marun Al Ras, Aitarun Triangle. So this kind of area. Refuting the enemy's account of the ambush its forces encountered, and in an effort to document the heroics of our fighters on the front lines, the Islamic Operations Room declares the following. Our fighters tracked a unit from the 51st Battalion, part of the 36th Division, as it infiltrated at dawn on the November 13th toward Bint Jebel. They were trying to carry out reconnaissance missions. Despite heavy air raids in the area, the force fell into a carefully prepared ambush by a group of resistance fighters. So they entered the kill zone, settled in a house, and with the call, Labaik Ya Nasrallah, our fighters targeted it with concentrated fire from multiple anti-personnel and anti-armor RPGs, destroying parts of the house and those inside. The house collapsed and the fighters opened fire on the rest of the unit. Clashes continued for more than 3 hours with the evacuation of casualties carried out under heavy smoke and fire cover. No ground activity by the Israeli army was recorded in the area after the incident up to this report date. So for the following 6 days, they haven't done anything there. They note that there was also a similar incident of the same Golani Brigade in 2006 at Bint Jebel. So Bint Jebel being here, more or less in the same area, a little bit higher up, I think, in terms of elevation. Okay, intensification of enemy aggression on Khiyam, 60 airstrikes on Khiyam. This is part of preparations for renewed attempts to advance toward the city after its first failed attempt over 10 days ago. Fighters clashed with advancing forces upon their arrival to the Wata Khiyam area, using machine guns, RPGs, targeted two Merkava tanks with guided missiles, resulting in their destruction. Concentrated missile strikes against the advancing forces, and in light of the heavy losses suffered by the enemy, Israeli forces partially withdrew from their forces, marking their second retreat. They were trying to advance in Hiyam, and they made it some of the way, but they didn't make it all the way and have stalled. So enemy losses, total losses suffered by the Israeli military since the announcement of the second phase of the ground operation, November 12th, as recorded by, in southern Lebanon on November 12th, as recorded by the fighters of the Islamic Resistance, are as follows: 18 killed, 32 wounded, some critically, 5 Merkava tanks destroyed, and 1 military bulldozer. Since October 1st, 2024, up to November 19th, the cumulative losses are 110 killed, 1,050 injured, 48 Merkava tanks, 9 military bulldozers, 2 Humvees, 2 armored vehicles, 2 troop carriers, 6 Hermes 450 drones downed, 2 Hermes 900 drones downed, and 1 quadcopter drone downed. They also publish, I don't know about daily, but they published one of their maps of where all their operations were today. And as you can see, the 19th, again, these little explosions are the operations. So there's operations in Shama, for example, or not Shama, on this side, it's where? This is not Shama. This is probably Farkila or somewhere like that. But lots of them inside, and then lots of them in northern Israel, continuing to be in northern Israel, but also all the way down here. And they show this kind of area of the where they can reach, I guess, or where they have reached so far. So it's just pretty devastating missile fire and a lot of ambushes as the Israelis try to advance again. So what can we anticipate? I think if there is, as I attest, no end in sight, then we can anticipate the Israelis to keep trying, keep getting into ambushes, keep hitting more targets in Beirut and more civilian targets and more targets on in southern Lebanon, and keep receiving escalating missile salvos in return in both Haifa and Tel Aviv. Like this for a while. And in Gaza, the same thing, intensification of genocidal campaigns, as if Israel is operating on some kind of belief that there's some atrocity that will be so bad.
Anti-Empire podcast, which was relaying the latest news of what's happening in Lebanon, especially, and in summary, how the ground war is being lost by Israel, and therefore they continue their slaughter of civilians and medics and journalists, being the cowards that they are. And the ones that are incapable of fighting once they get on the ground. And this is the fact, this is happening despite the fact that the United States government, not the people, but the United States government, because the United States people, if you look at the polls, you could see that how many wanted a ceasefire while our representative rejected the people. but the United States, UK, Germany, and Australia are all helping to defeat, trying to defeat this tiny country the size of Rhode Island after they had attacked a concentration camp called Gaza. These nations need to go to the dustbin of history sooner than later before they destroy the world. Thank you for listening, and tune in next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for the Shai Nana Show with your host, Zain Al-Amin.
The WPFW Local Station Board is hosting a town hall meeting on Saturday, December 7th at New Bethany Baptist Church, 1300 10th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., from noon to 2:30 p.m. Plenty of off-street parking is available. As this will be our last town hall while at our present location, 1990 K Street Northwest, we hope that you will attend this important meeting to discuss WPFW's relocation plans, as well as other important issues facing the station. Healthy refreshments will be served. We hope to see you there.
WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. The UN Security Council failed today to adopt a resolution that called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. 14 Security Council members voted for the resolution, and only the United States voted against it. The U.S. representative in the Security Council said, quote, "We will not support a resolution to ceasefire in Gaza without the release of the hostages," close quote. The resolution does call for the release of all hostages, but the wording suggests that their release would come only after a ceasefire is implemented. The veto was the fourth time the United States blocked an effort by the Council to demand a ceasefire since the war began over a year ago. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, over 43,000 people have been killed in the Gaza Strip since the war began, and more than 104,000 people have been wounded. In other news, in a major policy shift, President Biden approved providing anti-personnel landmines to Ukraine. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin confirmed the move to reporters today. Anti-personnel landmines are banned by a treaty signed by more than 160 countries, but the U.S. and Russia are not signatories. Arms control and human rights groups say they cause disproportionately high civilian casualties, and some can endanger civilians years after a conflict ends. The landmines the Biden administration will give Ukraine are so-called non-persistent, meaning they will lose their explosiveness after a certain period of time. Arms control organizations say the dangers to civilians still apply. The decision comes just days after the U.S. gave Ukraine permission to fire long-range U.S. missiles at targets in Russia. Ukraine carried out its first strike using the weapons inside Russia yesterday. That prompted Russian President Vladimir Putin to upgrade Russia's nuclear doctrine to lower the bar for the country's use of nuclear weapons. In domestic news, President-elect Donald Trump continued his key administration and cabinet announcements yesterday, naming major Republican donor Linda McMahon as his nominee for Secretary of Education and Wall Street executive Howard Lutnick to be Secretary of Commerce. Trump also tapped well-known TV physician and cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Mehmet Oz to lead the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. All three are subject to Senate confirmation. McMahon is the billionaire co-founder of World Wrestling Entertainment and served as administrator of the Small Business Administration in the first Trump White House. More recently, she chaired the board for the America First Policy Institute, which supports school choice. On the campaign trail, Trump repeatedly vowed to abolish the Department of Education in favor of relegating all educational responsibility to individual states. In a statement yesterday, Trump said, quote, "We will send education back to the states and will spearhead that effort," close quote. Mehmet Oz